Good day, I'm Stefan Christoph, and this is Art and Action interview series. I feature a conversation with an artist working at the intersections of art and social movements once a month. On this edition, I will be featuring a conversation that I recorded with Kathy Kennedy, a sound artist, teacher, and vocal coach. Kathy has worked at the intersections of movements for gender justice, feminist movements, and the arts for many years. Based in Gioggiage in Montreal, she has done incredible work mobilizing community spaces where people learn and develop their practice as singers, both on an individual level but also in a collective context. And it's really a pleasure to speak with Kathy about her work. She has organized in meaningful ways to create group and community-based projects like Kur Maha and many others over a very long time. And it was great to speak with Kathy for this series. Here is our conversation.
We're in a park. We are in Dante Park, some name they gave this space, but there's trees, there's bird, there's rain, so hear that. But we're outside, and I'm joined by Kathy Kennedy, who is a longtime community arts organizer, organizer of cultural spaces around singing. You were using the term singing adjacent to describe some of your work. You've been involved in a lot of things, but maybe first if you could just start by introducing yourself.
So I'm Kathy Kennedy, and I studied first as a visual artist and then decided that really music was my tool. And so I've been approaching music from, there's been classical training and different kinds of training, but you know, it's always been my tool as an artist. And so I think that sometimes my music does not get the attention from musicians that it does get from visual artists who seem to really get what I do.
Well, there's often a tapestry in your projects, like sort of a sonic tapestry that is also about the relationship between community and musical practice. So maybe you could just describe a bit for people that sort of focus on community-oriented singing practices.
So I came through a set of circumstances that led a lot of people to be around me seeking my, that is to say, I got into a job as a choir director at age 19, you know, quite unwittingly, like, I don't want to do this. And then it just sort of took. And from there on in, that kind of work has always come easy for me. And so sometimes I focus on my own work as a solo singer on stage, but I think the more noteworthy work that I have made has been uniting groups of people in song, mostly around big physical spaces, and more than often off the stage. I like to say I played on some of the best sidewalks, and such as this piece in 93 called Never Always, which was on the Esplanade of Place des Arts, uniting over 100 people, linked up through radio, in fact, broadcast on good old CKUT, my partner in crime for a long time.
So, yeah, just describe, if you don't mind, a bit more about, like, the sort of distinctions or reflections you have about why the process aspect of the community part of the creation of singing spaces is important to you.
I think what I'm trying to do most in my work is to alleviate this binary structure of music, of one side being the performer and the other side being the consumer. I feel like music needs to be taken out of that model more often. I think that music was initially and is in other places, something that is much more fluid and belongs to people, where people are not judged and they're allowed to make music regardless of their ability or training. I think something has gone really wrong with society's feelings and perceptions about singing. And I know this as a teacher of singing because I can't tell you how many people have come to me saying they want to sing, but they've been told they can't, and they're not worthy of being singing, And this is so wrong, you know. Singing is, it's a natural, singing is healing. Singing is what you your soul needs to do. We've been doing that since before language, you know. And so I think, yeah, the thing that I've really wanted to do with my skills is to facilitate structures and context for other people to do singing.
Can you talk a bit about how that intersects with public space? You know, you talked about singing on sidewalks.
Yeah, and I think it's important to say that, you know, I came up in the 80s around early ideas of feminism, female voice, and so public space is something that's very charged for women, and the voice, you know, the poet Anne Carson has this amazing article called The Gender of Sound, wherein she quotes Aristotle talking about the female voice as being irrational and hysterical and you know, something to be fearful of. And I've seen so much misogyny and really sort of targeting in on the female voice. So a lot of my early work was about that. A lot of my early work was about breaking down the classicism and inherent misogyny and colonialism in European classical music. So yeah, I've been very adamant about that. And one of my first takes was just get out of that concert hall. It's it's toxic. I went out. And so I tried to, and I found the choir situation really, really an interesting space to rediscover and to take on some really good old school feminist principles of how to lead something somewhat more democratically. You know, my 25 years of Kermaha, there was always some people who wanted me to be more of a kind of dictatorial figure, and then some who didn't, and I kind of tried to ride that as well as possible. But I really like the idea of many people making music together and inhabiting this physical space with their sounds. One of my favorite was an intervention that Kermaha had in, mid-90s on International Women's Day. We decided to occupy sites of patriarchy. So I have this little, you know, I've had a variety of low-watt radio transmitters, FM radio transmitters, and I used to make my own back in the day. So me and about 20 women came out of the metro with our boom boxes in hand that were receivers for this radio signal, and so we went to sites of patriarchy. We went to City Hall, the Cathedral, Notre Dame, and Hydro-Quebec. And we infused these sites with what we called a feminine vocal presence. And it was just these soothing, beautiful, lyrical tones with women's voices saying no words in particular, just infusing it with a feminine presence. And so that's a kind of typical piece that I'm proud of. And I'm about 95% sure it was not my idea, but some other brilliant woman in the collective. And here's me telling you about it now.
But that's interesting, because also the idea of the fluidity of process, right? Like, and sort of how ideas sort of are emerging when you create a collective context, which is challenging so much, this idea of like the inventor or the author.
And the genius, you know. This year, the folks that accepted the Oscar for Everything, Everywhere, All at Once, they said this thing that kind of made me teary. They said, genius is not one person, you know. Genius is, it comes out of a group or something. And the way that they represented the genius that they had created together, yeah, I get a little teary just thinking about it. It's so beautiful and it's so true.
So you mentioned Koramaha and this intervention. Some people who are listening in different places won't be familiar with Koramaha, which continues. So briefly, could you just share a bit about what that project is?
Sure. Koramaha is a feminist women's choir that is about 33 years old now, and it was formed with the founders of Obero Gallery. Sue Schnee asked me to do this, and they sheltered us and kept us going. And they've had two concerts a year, big concerts in Montreal, and a really high turnover of smart, creative, alpha females. Feminists, they're a tribe to be reckoned with. And they're still going. Year 33, I think, now led by the very brilliant and talented Sarah Rossi.
Okay. And you were involved in helping launch that initiative, Koramaha?
Yeah, totally. That was...
Okay. So you described a lot of ideas around collectivity and also like critiques of like sort of like ideas of individual ownership over creative ideas and how that's related to broader like structural inequities that are linked to patriarchy and colonialism. Okay, so these are like big systemic critiques that actually, you know, thankfully are getting a lot more attention these days, which is amazing. And that's not coming from nowhere. There's like a context of many years of work that led to these ideas becoming more widely discussed. But what I wanted to look at maybe here is that jump from the critic or the reflective space of thinking about this into the intervention space. That's a big jump to make, right? And, mm-hmm. you know, like thinking about how those systems play out and then moving from those thoughts or private discussions into intervening in the public space through the arts. Mm-hmm. That's a big jump, and it's also a scary jump that I think a lot of people struggle to understand how mm-hmm. to, like, how do you jump from, okay, I see this issue, or I see how I might want to intervene creatively or even as an activist, but how, you know, maybe if you could share a bit of experience about making that jump, and also that it's probably always a bit scary.
Mm-hmm. That's a really good question. And I'm not sure what the answer is, you know. I think it's not for everyone, and you have to have a certain outsider mentality. And I'm white. I identify as kind of a white middle-aged sort of middle-class lady. but I feel like a real outsider inside.
Mm-hmm. Critical of power.
Yeah, yeah. And I present as you know, as well adapted, but I don't think I am really. Inside, and at the same time, mm-hmm. you know, there's this, what makes, I think, mm-hmm. outsiders, that makes them heroic. You get a lot of, that is the fodder for heroism, because you have to know what resilience is, mm-hmm. and there has been, you know, some degree of obstacle and oppression in my life that I, you know, that I have that I fight to rise up against, and I have aligned myself with other people who know that. Mm. And that's really important. So I don't know, these two poles are the outsider loner and finding other outsider loners. I mean, you really do need to align with other marginals sometimes, which is you know, why Kermaha has you know, performed for every International Women's Day, performed for women's shelters, mm-hmm. for the Ecole Polytechnique, sung in the women's prison, has, you know, that's been a really essential part of the Kermaha mandate, is to support other women's groups. Mm-hmm. I don't think you can do good community work if you're doing it on your own and for your own, you know, praise and glorification. It just doesn't resonate, and it will just, you know, it will subside. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Well, you mentioned a bunch of stuff there that I think was really important for people listening outside, because we also share these interviews on Radio Al-Hara in Palestine. So you mentioned Ecole Polytechnique, which, yeah. I think is like a very important like point of mobilization for, yeah. feminist movements, but also movements for gender justice and justice in general. Just maybe if you could just briefly share with people what you're referencing, and also the response every year and all the sort of community mobilization the mobilizations for gender justice and in opposition to violence against women.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, the year Kermaha started was the year that 14 feminists were massacred in the engineering school of Montreal called Ecole Polytechnique. And it was a real, I mean, I knew someone personally who was at that school, and so me and my artist community of Montreal, we really felt it firsthand. Actually, one of our first concerts was in honor of that, and this is way back in the day, right? This is before the internet, and I remember doing a news, doing an interview, and my phone number was, you know, the contact number. We were so young and so underorganized, and I remember getting a really scary phone call by someone saying, "You think you're so smart, you feminist, you're gonna get it." And I had to spend some real hard thought that night of, what exactly am I doing? Am I doing this for me, or, you know, am I putting all my friends in peril by getting them out on the stage? Like, literally, somebody could take a shot at me for this. WTF. So that got me serious real fast.
So the singing was part, and that it shows the blurriness of the border between protest and art, right?
Yeah, just sticking up for yourself. Getting up on stage can be an actual threat to somebody. Wow. So that taught me the power of what we're doing, and every concert that anybody has ever seen Kermaha, it's so joyful to see these women just so proud of who they are and so supportive of each other. And I feel strongly as a feminist, you know, that feminism has to be about not just my feminism, but everybody's feminism, you know. And feminism is not just women, you know, it's about race and color and gender identity too.
You talked about this idea of singing adjacent or singing on the outside, and like I think that's a really important, beautiful, really critical concept to sort of like go back to an earlier point you're talking about, to sort of deconstruct the idea of the performer and the stage and sort of the clinical environment. You know, I was thinking about this recently because I was talking with a friend, an artist in Mexico, and we were talking about the idea of like harmony and what is dissonant and what is considered harmony in relation to like Western musical scales, and right, like, and how community like or folk music, you know, maybe is disharmonious sometimes, but actually is more about the space.
Yeah.
So any thoughts about like this idea of sort of actually naming, rather than just seeing like community music or folk music just as like sort of a beautiful novel thing, but actually it represents a different, like sort of a different paradigm in a way, a different like experience in the sense that it's not like shaped entirely by the Western classical musical model.
Yeah, and I think it's also about consumerism. You know, we hear music all the time on the radio, and we hear music, we hear voices that have been compressed and treated so much so that, you know, any minor tuning issues to the contemporary capitalist ear are seen as flawed and insufficient. And, you know, that there's something so wrong with that.
That was a conversation with artist Kathy Kennedy, sound artist, teacher, and vocal coach. Thank you to Kathy for being on the program. You can get more information about her work at kathykennedy.ca. This has been an Art in Action interview. I feature a conversation once a month with an artist working at the intersections of art and activism, and they broadcast on the first Friday of each month on Radio Hara in Palestine at 4:30 p.m. That's at radiohara.net. And we also share our broadcasts on the third Friday of each month at 11 a.m. on CKUT 90.3 FM in Montreal, and on the second Tuesday of each month at 1:30 p.m. also in Montreal on CJLO 1690 AM. You can find more information about this project at soundcloud.com/freecityradio. Thank you so much for listening to this edition of Art in Action, and I'll speak to you soon.